Hey guys, we're back again for another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. We must be right because Katie Gibbons has her coffee and you've already been to the bathroom and so have I.
Just tell all our business.
So, you guys didn't say it was off the record. My name is Scott Wright. I am a mediocre journalist.
I'm Kelly Turner. I'm not a doctor.
Katie Givens, I'm not a lawyer.
So we're doing it again today here at True Crime on Easy Street. It is the second week of July. I think my dates are all mixed up already.
Who knows?
It doesn't matter anymore. I don't have to do anything today. I'm just going to sit here and listen because it is Kelly's turn to be in the big chair, and I'm excited to hear this episode. I'm a little bit familiar with it, but I haven't watched the documentary in quite some time.
Okay.
Maybe a year or more.
Yeah.
A vague recollection. So I'm going to learn some new stuff today. So I'm excited. So be gone with it.
All right. So we'll jump right into it. So this is the mysterious death of Elisa Lamb. Now, this case does not have an Alabama tie. I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there. We're going all the way to California, which we just got back from there. We were in Alcatraz, but it did have an Alabama tie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I found an Alabama tie in my California case, but you're telling me that you were not able to do that.
No. Got it. There's not one today.
All right.
But anyways.
Maybe we'll have one next week.
Maybe. We shall see. So the first thing I want to talk about before I get into Elisa Lamb and who she was is I want to talk about where this happened.
Mm-hmm.
This happened at the Cecil Hotel in California, in an area of Los Angeles, California, that is known today as Skid Row.
Oh, this is the Skid Row section of that city.
Yes.
Okay.
Skid Row. So we'll get into all that. So the Cecil Hotel was built in 1924 by three individuals as a destination for business travelers and tourists. They were into the hotel business. Mm-hmm. So they go in together, they build this building. It cost $1.5 million to complete. It has a lavish marble lobby with stained glass windows. It's got this big statuary made of alabaster. It's got potted plants everywhere. Most of them are big palms.
So the day that it opened, it was a very upscale, lavish hotel.
It was really lavish in the lobby. And they each invested about $2.5 million into the hotel, even though similar hotels were going up everywhere. So they completed it, but then they're making all these additions to it. Mm-hmm. And so it ends up costing each of them about $2.5 million. All of these kinds of hotels are popping up everywhere as an affordable place to stay, but also kind of posh.
Okay.
So then the Depression hits.
Terrible timing.
Mm-hmm. And that was within the first 5 years. After 5 years, Depression hits.
So not so much travel.
No. And then in the 40s, the hotel did very well as a popular destination. But then after that, the steady decline of the Cecil began. And that's because this area, which is now known as Skid Row, started becoming increasingly populated with folks who live a very transient lifestyle. So it was not Skid Row when they built it there.
Right.
So it's
Skid Row sprung up around them.
Yes. Yes. As many as 10,000 homeless people lived within a 4-mile radius of the Cecil Hotel.
By the 60s, I guess?
Yeah. 60s, 70s. And today, there's probably even more.
Probably even more.
In 2008, a portion of the hotel was refurbished after some new owners took over.
Mm-hmm.
In 2011, part of the Cecil Hotel was rebranded and named, quote, Stay on Main, end quote, with separate reception areas during the day, but with shared facilities. You could rent a room with other people.
Huh.
And
like
get a really
situation.
Cheap rate. Yeah.
Okay.
You could get your own room. You could. There were various types of living situations there. Some people were long-time residents. Some people were short-time renters.
Yeah. If you Google Cecil Hotel now, Stay on Main, that's what pops up. Because when I Googled it, I was confused.
Yes. In 2011, the official website was still called thececilhotel.com, but they have, in present day, they have officially
rebranded
that. Mm-hmm. In 2014, the hotel was sold to New York City Hotelier. Is that how you say that? Hotelier?
Hotel owner?
Hotel IER. I know the word.
What the heck is that word?
Hotelier.
Oh, my gosh. That's a fancy.
Yeah.
Anyways, the Richard Bourne for $30 million, after which another New York-based firm, Simon Baron Development, acquired a 99-year ground lease on the property. This was in 2014. In 2016, Matt Baron, president of Simon Baron, said he was committed to the preservation of this historical place. He said it's very significant. The building has these very specific components he wants to keep. That grand lobby we talked about. So he's wanting to fix all of the issues with the interior and the, quote, hodgepodge, I do know that word, work that had been done there in more recent years. So he wants to make it nice. It was janky.
And you said it opened in 24?
1924, yeah.
So it's coming up on its 100th year anniversary.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So.
The hotel closed in 2017 for renovation, but the work was suspended indefinitely when the COVID-19 pandemic hit.
It sounds like this place keeps getting hit by bad timing.
A lot of people will tell you the Cecil Hotel is cursed.
Yeah, haunted, cursed, something.
All of the above. In February of 2017, the Los Angeles City Council voted to deem the Cecil a historic cultural monument because it is representative of an early 20th century American hotel and because of the historic significance of its architect's body of work.
Cool.
So
I want to stay there, or are you about to talk me out of that?
I'm probably, I don't know. We'll see. On December 13th, 2021, the Cecil Hotel reopened as an affordable housing complex operated by the Skid Row Housing Trust. The facility provides affordable living accommodations for 600 low-income residents. So it's now been revamped as low-income residential housing.
Okay. Well, that's a good use of space.
Yes. Now let's talk about the curse. In 1931, a guest of the Cecil Hotel, W.K. Norton, died in his room after taking poison capsules. And throughout the 1940s and 50s, there were more suicides at the Cecil. In 2008, two longtime residents referred to the Cecil as, quote, the suicide, end quote. And it became a popular nickname in social media years later.
Ugh.
You're talking me out of it.
Not a good brand.
No.
The Cecil became a notorious rendezvous spot for adulterous couples, drug activity, and a common ground for sex workers. Still want to go, Scott?
Well, now you're talking me back into it again.
All right, I was wondering. All right, in 1964, a retired telephone operator named Pigeon Goldie Osgood, who had been a well-known and well-liked long-term resident at the hotel, was found dead in her room. She had been raped, stabbed, beaten, and her room was ransacked.
Oh, no.
Now, there was a suspect who was arrested. Apparently, this suspect was covered in blood and wandering down the street, but was later cleared and released.
That sounds suspicious.
I have no idea. Her death remains unsolved. In the 1980s, the hotel was the temporary residence of serial killer Richard Ramirez, known as the Night Stalker.
Good grief.
Ramirez was a regular presence on the Skid Row area of Los Angeles, and according to a hotel clerk, he claims he spoke to Ramirez quite a bit and is rumored to have stayed at the Cecil for a few weeks for pretty much all of his killing spree in that area.
So that was home base for him while he was night stalking.
Yep. He reportedly stripped off his bloody clothes in the alley outside the building before climbing the interior stairs to his residence. Another serial killer, Austrian Jack Unterweger.
Don't look at me.
I don't even know how to say that. But he stayed at the Cecil in 1991, possibly because he sought to copy Ramirez's crimes. But while there, he strangled and killed at least three sex workers.
Mm. This place just can't catch a break.
Yeah. I have no idea how you would say, I'm going to go back to that last night. I have no idea how you would say that because it's, I can't do it justice. I'm sure someone who has a lovely Austrian accent could.
You probably have
you're in the wrong room for that.
Unterweger or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Somebody can sounds let me know. Yeah, whatever. Anyways, I can't do that. I'm sorry. Southern. All right. So in 2013, the Cecil became the focus of renewed attention when surveillance footage of a young Canadian student, Elisa Lam, behaving erratically in the hotel's elevator went viral. The video depicts Lam repeatedly pressing the elevator's buttons, walking in and out of the elevator, and possibly attempting to hide from someone. It was recorded shortly before her disappearance. The Stay on Main, also known as the Cecil Hotel, is the last place Lam was seen alive. And that is where our story begins today. So, Scott, if I haven't convinced you to go to the Cecil Hotel yet and spend the night...
I don't think so. No, I think I'm back off of the trolley that one.
You couldn't go and spend the night at the Cecil Hotel now because it no longer exists. Now it's this affordable housing for individuals there, low-income individuals. So they're making a really good use of the property at this time and keeping a historic landmark there. So the Cecil no longer exists, and this event that we're going to talk about probably helped contribute to that, to finally putting the Cecil to bed. American Horror Story Hotel was loosely based on
So one of the more recent seasons of that, season 5 or 6, whatever it would be.
I think it was, it might have actually been the last season that
I think you're right. I think it was the last one.
I've watched some since then. I was about to say it may have been the last season that I watched, but anyways, I don't know. I think there's been several.
But I mean, it wasn't the first two or three because the first one was the house, and then there was New Orleans, and then there was the circus, and then there was
the circus,
something else. So it had to be 4, 5, 6 somewhere in there.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. But it was in the Cecil Hotel inspired that season. I'll put it that way.
Makes sense.
So, Elisa Lam was the daughter of immigrants from Hong Kong, and she was a student at the University of British Columbia. They immigrated to British Columbia in Canada. So, she's a student there, and sometime in mid-2010, she began to do a blog, and her blog was called Ether Fields, and it was on Blogspot. Over the next 2 years, she posted pictures of different kind of clothes she liked, talked about things that she was doing in her life.
So not a theme so much as just, here are snapshots from my life this blog.
And she talked a lot about her struggle with mental illness on her blog as well. So it was a great way for her to have an outlet. It was almost like her diary that she would blog and post things.
It's basically what a blog is, right? I mean, depending on your point of view, it is your digital diary.
Absolutely.
Can be.
In January 2012, she had a blog post where she talked about a, quote, relapse at the start of her current school term that forced her to drop several classes, leaving her feeling, quote, so utterly directionless and lost. And she titled this post, quote, "You're always haunted by the idea you're wasting your life," end quote.
That's tough.
And that's a quotation from novelist Chuck Palahniuk. Can you tell me what Chuck Palahniuk wrote?
Should I know it? Because I don't.
Yeah.
Name sounds familiar.
Well, the first rule is you don't talk about it.
Fight Club? Yes. That's why that name sounded familiar. Okay.
Yes. Right. Of course, he wrote several other books, too. I've read 3 or 4 of his books. Love his books.
I've never read Fight Club. I've got to do that.
Love his books. My favorite of his is called Invisible Monsters. You should read it this week. It's
okay.
Great.
Fantastic. Invisible Monsters. I'm on it.
But I digress. All right. So one of her favorite novelists, so she has this quote here. And this was the epigraph for her blog.
Okay.
So Lam worried that her transcript would look suspicious because of having to withdraw. And what we now know that she means by this relapse is, in her struggle with her mental illness, she would go off of her medication and it would cause certain things to start happening and it would cause some issues with her life. And so this is what she is referring to.
So she's not a drug addict?
No. Relapse of her mental illness.
Gotcha.
Yes. So she's blogging, and a little over 2 years after she starts this, she says that she's going to leave this blog for a new one on Tumblr, and it's called Nouvelle Nouveau. I think it's a cool title.
Now, what year is this?
2 years later, so that would be about 2012.
Yeah, that is.
At the start of January 2012, she's blogging on one, but then she's going to move over and do Nouvelle Nouveau. And it's
very Tumblr era.
Yeah. And the content is mostly fashion photos, her same favorite quote from her favorite author, and a few posts just kind of in her own words. So she's going to just continue her blog, but she's just moving it over to Tumblr.
Yeah.
Now, she wanted to travel to California and see all the sights, as many young people do.
Sure.
They get a certain age, especially college age, they want to travel, they want to do things, they want to... That independence is new and exciting, and they want to do something with it. And so that's what she wanted to do. She convinced her parents to allow her to take this trip to California alone under the condition that she called them daily, checking in with them.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Okay. So they let this young lady take her dream trip. And so she goes to California and she travels on the Amtrak, on the buses. She visits San Diego and she goes to the zoo and she posts the pictures where she's there and she's blogging about her trip. On January the 26th, she arrives in Los Angeles, and after 2 days in Los Angeles, she checks into the Cecil Hotel. She was initially assigned a shared room on the fifth floor. As you do, you'll get a lower rate if you live with a couple of roommates. Mm-hmm. And you typically won't know them. Especially if you're there alone, they'll assign you a room.
Back to the hostel style setup.
Yep. So her roommates begin to complain about Elisa's certain odd behavior.
Okay.
And so they moved her out of her room after a couple of days. Now, according to interviews with these roommates and according to the hotel manager, who was at the time was named Amy Price, the roommates didn't like her odd behavior. She was leaving notes on their pillows that said, get out, or...
Well, that's creepy.
You know, go home, go away, those kinds of things. And other behavior was very erratic and annoying, frankly, to her roommates. And so they moved her and gave her her own room after that. She would also lock the door and they couldn't get in. And then she would require a password for them to get in.
Oh, just okay.
You know,
just not normal.
Yeah. Stuff that's going to really annoy your roommate. So they give her her own room. A few days before her disappearance, Elisa attended a live taping of Conan in Burbank.
All right.
But she was escorted off the premises by security because of her disruptive behavior.
Good grief.
She contacted her parents in British Columbia daily while traveling to all the different places. And they talked to her every day up until January the 31st, 2013. This is the day that she is scheduled to check out of the Cecil Hotel and leave for Santa Cruz. Her parents do not hear from her, and they immediately knew something was wrong because they had spoken to her every day. So they call LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department, and they flew to Los Angeles. Because we have a history here.
Right.
With Elisa.
She has rubbed somebody the wrong way and she's beaten up and bleeding in an alleyway somewhere.
And
possibly.
She has this history of going off of her medication and then behaving erratically. And it actually lended her at least one hospital trip.
Okay. During her trip
in her lifetime.
Okay.
So her parents immediately know something's not right, and they jump to action, and they call the Los Angeles Police Department, and they start investigating. The hotel staff who saw Elisa that day said that she was alone. Outside of the hotel, Katie Orphan, a manager of the Last Bookstore, which is located in that area was the only person who recalled seeing her that day. And she basically said, quote, she was outgoing, very lively, very friendly. She was there in the lady's store to get gifts for her family to take back home. Mm-hmm. She was talking about what book she was going to get, whether or not she should get this one or that one, what was going to be too heavy to carry home. Fairly average conversation for a bookstore.
Yeah, sounds like it.
This particular manager of this bookstore did not notice any kind of erratic behavior, is okay. why I'm telling you this.
The indication being that she was on her medication that day.
Apparently. Okay. Maybe. Sure. I don't know.
We're just police not having an episode.
Right, right. Yeah. Police searched Elisa's room, and they had dogs go through the building, including the rooftop, but the dogs were unsuccessful in detecting any kind of scent. They did not search every single room, according to Sergeant Rudy Lopez. They can't do that without probable cause.
Yeah, right.
So if you're staying in a hotel and you're on the 10th floor and somebody on the 5th floor goes missing, they can't just come up and search your room. They have to have probable cause. So that proved to be possibly an issue. I don't know. You can decide once you get this whole story. They have to, of course, believe probable cause. They have to believe that a crime has been committed. But at this time, they're just looking for her. And she's a grown woman.
There's no crime yet.
No.
That we know of, that anybody knows of.
She's a grown woman. She can absolutely go missing and not talk to her family. Mm-hmm. She's an adult. But because this is not typical behavior, the police are going to help out the family because they're the family saying, no, this is not what she does. You know, she calls us every day.
Credit to the LAPD for believing these parents. Yeah. I mean, obviously they had the fear of God in their eyes when they got to the LAPD and convinced them, hey, something's not right here. This is not an adult who's decided she doesn't want to talk to us anymore. Like you said, she's perfectly justified in doing. Mm-hmm. But they convinced the LAPD, no. Something's wrong.
Her sister was able to let the detectives know about her history of her mental health issues and going off her medication. It's when they learned this that they're okay. All right, let's get to the bottom of what's going on with Lisa. So on February the 6th, a week after Elisa had been last seen, the LAPD decided that they needed more help in this case. So they start putting out flyers with her image all in the neighborhood. They put them online. The public is starting to attend to this. Wait a minute, we got somebody missing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in the media. It's on social media. People are getting the word out. On February 13th, after another week with no sign of Elisa, the LAPD released a video of the last known sighting, which is the infamous elevator footage.
That you showed me 30 minutes ago.
Yes. So I will post a link to this online on our Instagram, and then I can give it to you, Scott, to put on our Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can check this video out and you can see, but I briefly described it earlier. She gets into the elevator. She pushes all the buttons. She stands there in the elevator.
And it's a camera up in the corner, like a lot of security cameras are in elevators. It's in the corner, so you've got this fisheye sort of almost look. Mm-hmm. So you can see pretty much the entire elevator.
And it's kind of grainy. It's kind of grainy. Mm-hmm. You can't see the time and the date, and they have taken out maybe, I forget how much of the footage they've actually removed. But LAPD later said that that was because there were other individuals in the footage that they weren't ready to just put out to people just yet. Mm-hmm. And one speculation was that was why they did that. Another speculation is, no, they're just crappy hotel cameras. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just, you know.
Right.
And the security cameras on her floor weren't even working. Mm-hmm. So, and the date, I don't know how many times this is a cliche. When you have video footage of someone, the date and the timestamp, it's never correct.
Yeah.
Well, on those things.
It's never easy to fix the date and the time on security cam footage. Mm-mm.
She's speaking from experience, yes, it sounds like.
Yes. It's never an easy thing. Really? It's kind of like back in the day when you had to try to change the date and time on a VCR.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it's just,
where you're just clicking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So, you know, you're having to.
So basically, the security footage at the hotel was flashing 12 midnight. Probably. Is what you're telling me.
It's blurred out when you see it online. Okay. But it's not,
I mean, they
correct.
Could probably do math though to figure it out. You know, what time does it say right now? You know,
and then, yeah, right. Yeah, reverse engineer it and figure out what time it was.
Right. So in this footage, it's about 2.5 minutes. She's alone in the elevator. Like I said, she's pressing all the buttons. And then she sort of scoots over, kind of does this box step around to the side, like she's hiding from someone.
Yeah, it looks like she's trying to hide.
She looks out. She kind of jumps out almost childlike. She comes back in, then she has 1 foot out, 1 foot in, her hands are moving really weird. Scott, you point out, she looks like she's explaining something to someone.
Yeah, like she looks like she's, and you can't see her entire body, you can just see like the right side of her outside the door of the elevator. It looks like she's counting off on her fingers at one point, like she's explaining steps of how to...
whatever.
Do something.
Yes. Yeah. And you never see anybody other than Elisa.
Right.
In the elevator.
Yeah.
And she goes back into the elevator. She does some sort of little box step again, pushes all the buttons again. And then she casually steps off the elevator and walks to her left. And then the elevator doors close.
My first thought was it looked to me like somebody who has never been on an elevator before, who isn't exactly sure how it works. I mean, okay, here are buttons. Here's a door. I'm going to hit all the buttons. Why is the door not closing? Let me look outside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Draw your own explanations, but that's one of the first things. And of course, she's been on an elevator at some point in her life, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. It's but very that's what childlike it looked like. Behavior, yeah. Too. Pushing all the buttons. Her movements seem very... child.
And she's how old at the time? Early 20s?
She's in college.
Gotcha.
And she kind of jumps out off of the elevator like she's going to surprise somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she jumps back in and it's just very strange.
It's not normal.
It's very, very strange. Yes. Yeah. And her hand movements are very creepy. And strange, and the way that she's moving about. And so, of course, this goes viral quickly because of the nature of this video. It's very spooky to watch, especially knowing that when she steps off that elevator and she walks out and those elevator doors just slowly slide shut, it's the last time you see her alive. And so
give you chills.
It is a very creepy video to watch, and I could imagine very heartbreaking for her family to see this video. But it definitely goes viral. So as I said, the video draws worldwide interest because of this strange behavior. It is reposted widely, including on the Chinese video sharing site Youku.
It's like their version of YouTube, perhaps.
It gets 3 million views and 40,000 comments in the first 10 days that it's posted.
Wow.
And most of the comments are people find it very creepy and unsettling. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of the comments. Now, several theories are going to come out to try to explain her actions. One is that she's trying to escape from somebody who's pursuing her because, you know, we saw that at the beginning.
Where she looks like she's trying to hide at one point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then the behavior of her pushing every single button doesn't make sense.
That's not how you get away.
No. Others suggested that she might be on drugs. Mm-hmm. She's on ecstasy or some kind of party drug, and she's, you know...
having a trip.
Mm-hmm. Behaving strangely because of that. And then it's at this point in the investigation when the history of mental health issues becomes known. Elisa was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and had psychotic episodes, especially when she did not take her medication. She would hallucinate and run and hide under her bed when she was at home.
Okay.
So that becomes known at this point once this goes viral. Elisa had been prescribed several medications for her mental health issues. According to her family, they tried to keep her mental health issues very private. Of course, you want to protect your child and your daughter. Yeah. People are very judgy. People are intolerant of that sort of thing.
Yes. Right.
Now, she had no history of suicidal ideations or attempts. So the family, they never had that issue. Mm. It was agreed that Elisa would go on this trip. She would take her medication. She would call them every day, and she would have a wonderful trip in her 20s to California.
Yeah, sure.
So I know a lot of people have criticized her family for allowing her to go on this trip, but she's grown.
Yes, and I mean, mm-hmm. she wants to be a normal.
She wants
know,
to,
she
have,
wants to
this.
Have this these normal experiences despite her mental health struggles.
Correct.
And yeah, she deserves to get to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you have mental health struggles does not mean that you need to stay at home.
Correct. Correct.
I agree.
She's you know, the family's, of course, everything about her and her family come under a microscope since this, mm-hmm. this
hindsight's 2020.
And people can be really, really cruel. So we're going to send all the love that we can to the family members and not judge them for allowing their daughter to see the world.
Yes.
Live her life.
Exactly. So again, people are looking at this video. They're coming up with their theories. People think that the video had been tampered with before it was made public for the reasons that we've talked about. The date and the time are wrong. It's fuzzy. There's some of it missing. So the theories have been vast. Mm-hmm. And stretching to all corners,
yeah.
Of what?
Well, there's a conspiracy nut for every single thing that's ever happened in the history of mankind. I'm sure this is no exception.
Yes. So over the course of the next 19 days, the guests at the Cecil Hotel are going to start complaining about their water, and they're going to complain that it is anywhere from its odd tasting to that it has a sweet taste to the fact that some people are experiencing their water is coming out of the tap and it's black. Uh-uh. And then some people are going to say that they have low pressure, low water pressure. So a lot of complaints over the next 19 days at the hotel. Mm-hmm. So on the morning of February the 19th, Santiago Lopez, a hotel maintenance worker, he's going to go up and he's going to check one of those 1,000 gallon tanks that's located on the roof of the Cecil Hotel. There are, I believe, two of them up there.
Okay. And that's the water supply for the hotel.
Yes. There may be more, and I apologize if I got that wrong, but I believe there were two of them. So he goes up there to check, and he finds the hatch to one of the water tanks open.
Which is not normal.
No, it's always closed. He looks into the tank, and that is where he finds the body of Elisa Lamb. She is naked and she is floating face up in the water.
She's naked.
Mm-hmm. And she is floating face up. And it looks like she has been there for 19 days, all of the 19 days. The tank was drained and cut open because the hatch was too small to accommodate the equipment to get her body out of
right.
there. Now, on February the 21st, the Los Angeles Coroner's Office issued a finding of accidental drowning. Now, they are going to also talk about her mental health issues being a significant factor mm-hmm. in this. The full coroner's report wasn't released until June of that year, but it stated that her body had been found naked with her clothing that matches what she's wearing in the elevator floating in the water, and that the clothing had a quote sand like particulate end quote. So there was sand on her clothes, I guess is what they mean. Her watch and room key were also found with her, but they never found her phone. Her body was moderately decomposed and very bloated.
Right.
It was mostly greenish with some marbling evident on the abdomen and the skin. There was no evidence of physical trauma, sexual assault, or suicide. The toxicology test showed traces consistent with the prescriptions that were found with her belongings in her room.
Mm-hmm.
Plus non-prescription drugs such as Sinutab and ibuprofen.
Just
typical over the counter.
Yeah, but you get a things. You get a headache from flying or traveling or just not being in your native environment. I mean, I'm always on aspirin if I'm on a trip somewhere, it seems like.
Correct. A very small quantity of alcohol was present, but it was only about 0.02.
So she had a drink.
Yeah, that's one drink, right?
But no other recreational drugs. So the theories about that her behavior was because she was on drugs at that time, they find anything, the autopsy. Now, folks who stick to that theory say that can be explained away because of the time and floating in the water and all of that. Okay, whatever. But there wasn't anything found. Right. They still found her regular prescriptions in her body. So
and the alcohol.
And the alcohol.
Alcohol dissipates pretty quickly.
So, you know, I am not from the belief that she was on any kind of recreational drugs that caused this behavior. Among her possessions left at the hotel, there were those prescription medications. They were seemingly untouched. So what they're saying is the amount of medication she had with her did not match how long she had been gone.
Yeah.
Showing them that she, in fact, had not taken her medication as she was supposed to.
I understand. Okay.
Even though they found some in her body, she had not been taking it appropriately because the levels were not where they should have been had she been.
She's been gone a week and she had 30 pills and there's still 28 pills left.
I mean, yeah, something like that. Right. And I don't know that that's exactly it, but that's a great example of what they're talking about.
Today's episode is brought to you in part by A&W Outdoor Services. You know, they're located right here in Cherokee County. And I called Alan myself just a few weeks ago, and he and his crew came out to my house, pressure washed the whole thing. It looks brand new. Well, as brand new as my house can possibly look after 25 years. But all I did was call Alan at 256-706-7964. He and the guys showed up and cleaned up everything. It looked fantastic. The pollen has fallen a little bit since then. So if you haven't done this already, now's the perfect time to call Alan and A&W Outdoor Services at 256-706-7964 and let them do for you what they've already done for me.
It's time to plan your best vacation ever right here in Cherokee County, Alabama.
Many outdoor adventures await. Wet a hook in beautiful Weiss Lake, swing away at Cherokee Pines Golf Club, climb to the best view around at Cherokee Rock Village, hike the Little River Canyon National Preserve, take a days-long splash at Pirates Bay Water Park, and much, much more.
The Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism has a full list of recommended lodging facilities, RV sites, and campgrounds, and they're all set up to suit your vacation needs, whatever they may be.
So come see us from wherever you are. And if you already live right here in lovely Cherokee County, plan your summer 2023 staycation with the Chamber by visiting cherokee-chamber.org.
Are you in the market for a full-time Weiss Lake home or recreational lot? Let Trini Davis and Elizabeth Powell put their all-star property group at Keller Williams Realty to work for you. Trini and Elizabeth are locals themselves, so they know the Weiss Lake area, and with over 40 years of experience, they're professional listing and buying agents, talented home stagers and photographers, and specialized marketing team will work to make your lakefront dreams come true. Check out the Keller Williams team on Facebook at All Star Property Rome. You can also visit at All Star Property Rome to browse their images on Instagram or give them a call at 706-844-7493. That's the All-Star Property Group with Keller Williams Realty at 706-844-7493. You can hit pause, call them now, and make your Weiss Lake dreams a reality.
Police are going to rule that her erratic behavior on the elevator was caused by one of her paranoid hallucinations because of under medication. And they're going to speculate that she climbed into the tank on her own, believing herself to be in danger. Because as I said, in the past, when she would have an episode, she would crawl under her bed.
Right.
She would have a hallucination. She would crawl under her bed for safety.
I guess my first question is, and I remember watching that video that documentary and thinking, okay, that sounds like the most plausible explanation, but I don't remember how she was able to get onto the roof.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that. So they are going to say that once she got into the tank, there was enough water in the tank for her to get out. But as
it was
the hotel,
full,
as the hotel, as the folks begin to use the water, the levels went down and she was not able to climb out. Mm-hmm. Or maybe once she got into the tank, she was never able to get out in the first place.
Right.
Could
she
swim?
One of the twos. She could swim.
Okay.
Yeah. And she, their theory about her clothes coming off, if you've ever jumped into a body of water in your clothes, they become very heavy. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to stay afloat,
okay.
If you're stuck in a water tank, and
I gotta
you
get these
get
jeans
out,
off.
You might shed your clothes to try and they're weighing you down,
right.
Basically. So that they were able to theorize that, sort of explain that away. So this is what the police think, and this is how they've ruled her death as an accidental drowning, which is horrible in itself. Mm-hmm. But we have this video that's gone viral and we have some things that don't quite sit right with a lot of folks who look at this case. So that's what we're going to talk about right now. So what are some problems? How did she get in the tank? Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people can't get past is how in the world did she make it up to that roof and get it into that tank? Now, doors and stairs that access the hotel's roof are locked, according to the hotel manager at the time. Only staff have the passcodes and the keys, and any attempt to force them open would have triggered an alarm.
Huh.
If it was working.
Good point, Scott. Now, they claim that it was. Mm-hmm. Everything was working. And if she had shimmied her way out onto that roof, an alarm should have gone off. No one is reporting any kind of alarm going off in the hotel during that time. The hotel's fire escape, Scott.
Thank you. Last week we talked about people not saying that word correctly.
could have allowed her to bypass those security measures. And in fact, the dogs that they brought in had her sent until it was lost near a window that actually connected to the fire escape. So that explained how she
got out. And if she's in this frame of mind where she thinks she's being chased,
or she needs to get to safety, she needs to hide.
Mm-hmm. Why not? I mean, climbing out a window and up a fire escape is not any crazier than climbing into a water tank.
No, if you're feeling threatened.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Or in fact, if someone is actually chasing you.
Sure, can't discount that.
I mean, possibly. I mean, right. We just talked about earlier how the hotel had how many serial killers? Two to live there?
Two that we know of off the top of our
heads. One whose name I can say, one whose name I can't. But I mean, other and people had been raped, stabbed.
Yeah, not the best part of town.
Right.
A lot of transient people.
Mm-hmm.
With
coming
issues.
Coming in and out of this hotel.
I think they say at least 16 people have died in this hotel.
Mm-hmm. Like,
desperate people do desperate things.
Yeah, so that's what a lot of people continue to hold on to with this, is they're not ready to just say, they don't feel it is doing Elisa any kind of justice by just saying, oh, it was her mental illness, check and check. Mm-hmm. They feel like that's wrong to her. And so that's why a lot of people are holding on to this theory that something else was going on that particular night. So anyway, so we may have explained away how she wouldn't have triggered an alarm if she went out to the fire escape. And in fact, the dogs confirmed that that's where they lost her scent. Another strange thing that happened after her death, a video posted to the internet after her death to her blog.
What?
Her blog. There were some posts that went onto her blog after she died.
And her phone was missing.
Yeah, and no one found her phone. Now, there is a, apparently there's some sort of something on Tumblr. What do you call it?
Like an automatic.
Maybe.
Like where she has typed
them up, scheduled them. I know when we drop episodes here, we can schedule that.
Yeah, Katie, you schedule it on Tuesday to drop on Wednesday or whatever. Yeah.
So that could easily be explained away.
Okay. But wouldn't,
if she scheduled them to do that.
But wouldn't that be easy to get to the bottom of?
I think so. I think that, and the police do believe that she scheduled them and that was that. It was some sort of update that would happen in your queue in Tumblr. But again, we don't have her phone, so we're not able to check on that. Whether the continued updates to her blog were facilitated by theft of the phone, the work of a hacker, or through that automated queue is unknown. The autopsy report and its conclusions were also questioned based on incomplete information. For instance, it does not say what the results of the rape kit and fingernail kit were, or even if they were processed. Mm. Now, the final report did come out and said there was no evidence of sexual assault, rape, any of that sort of thing, but they were inconclusive when it came to fingernail kit, that sort of thing. Was it really done properly?
I mean, I wonder how long, 19 days in the water. I don't know
I guess how much they actually cared to thought do that with, that if would there be. Wasn't, yeah.
Correct, yeah, correct. Right. Now, there were certain details of the autopsy that led others to believe that she was sexually assaulted. And I'm not going to go into those details, but let me say this. The way that her body was floating, she's lying on her back, mm-hmm. and you know how when you find a body and it's been lying a certain way and blood will pool to whatever area you're lying on? Well, apparently the way that she was floating, it did that. And of course, then the bloating is happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was just some evidence that there might have been some sexual assault, but I really believe, and so does the coroner, that it had to do with the way that her body was positioned.
Okay.
But it's very, I'm trying to do her as much justice as I can. Yeah. I've already talked about that she was naked in there, and I don't want to keep being, you can look that up and see why, but it's easily explained away.
Right.
Okay. So I don't want to really go into all of that, but it's not, because I don't think it was a sexual assault.
Right.
I don't think there was evidence of that. All right, so there was another video where someone said, okay, let's see if we can get out onto this roof. This video was posted to the internet after her death, showed that the hotel's roof was actually very easily accessible through that fire escape, using that fire escape.
Okay, all right.
And the two lids of the water tanks were open when they did that, even though the hotel had repeatedly said, they're always closed. They're always closed. On this particular day, this person just took it upon themselves to see, and they were both open.
Wow. Wow.
So she didn't have to push the latch up. She didn't have to do.
Yeah. And I assume some of the speculation, she's a little small person. Maybe it's a big heavy metal grate, and she wouldn't have had the strength to open it on her own.
You go up a ladder. Mm. So you're on the fire escape. You get on the roof. You're looking at the water tank. Well, then you have to climb a ladder. Hold onto the ladder and push the latch open at the same time.
So you wouldn't have your full body weight behind it.
Yeah, but if it's already open.
A little bit easier.
And it was for this person who put this video on there.
I would have to imagine it was open because I don't think she would have thought to go to. I think she would say, oh, an opening.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Right.
If she went up there herself.
If she went up there.
So those are some of the things that don't sit quite right with folks who just are not willing to believe that it was an accidental drowning. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you can think what you want for yourself. I mean, any of this making sense or do we feel like we've explained it?
Well, I mean, what's the, how else, I don't know how long that, how tall that ladder is up to the top of that water tower, that hatch, but how else is somebody going to get her into that tank? I mean, there's got to be some, want to get too far into this, but if she's already been incapacitated in some way and somebody puts her in that tank, wouldn't there be nicks and cuts and scratches as she's dragged up and shoved in and, you know, some sort of damage to her body?
Yeah. And there's just not.
Yeah.
I've never tried to carry anyone up a ladder, but I can't imagine.
Nor have I.
Well, if I have raped and murdered this person and I want to throw them in a water tank to get rid of evidence or to get rid of the body, that's a lot of work to go up, mm-hmm. out the fire escape, up the water tank.
Yeah.
And never be seen or heard.
Right.
I also feel like we kind of skated past all these people drinking this water that has a dead person floating in it.
Oh, yeah, I don't have a problem with us skating past that.
I know. Yeah, they're yeah. saying that the water was odd tasting and even sweet tasting.
Yeah, you said sweet, and I can't get that out of my head. So mm-hmm. y'all don't deserve to either.
Yeah, yeah. And then the black, some of it was black water, and then there was low water pressure.
Mm. Yeah, that's.
No,
I know. It's horrible.
You wonder why I don't drink tap water. You never know.
And none of our listeners are going to go to a hotel and use the tap water again.
Don't go to the Cecil.
They also don't recommend you using the cups at the hotel, so just saying that.
Yeah, next time before you travel, get on and read some of those travel tips for hotels. Some of them make more sense than others, but yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
They're out there, plenty of them. Some of them make sense and are for good reason.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
this one.
Yes. In September of 2013... Elisa Lam's parents filed a wrongful death suit claiming the hotel failed to, quote, inspect and seek out hazards in the hotel that presented an unreasonable risk of danger to her and to other guests, end quote, and seeking unspecified damages and burial costs. Now, the hotel argued that it could not have reasonably foreseen that she might have entered the water tanks, and since it remained unknown how she actually got in the water tank, no liability could be assigned for failing to prevent it. So in 2015, the lawsuit was dismissed.
I mean, think I agree.
If you can't say specifically how she got in the water tank, yeah. you can't necessarily say it's the hotel's fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to establish something there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. So.
Oh. It's a sad,
so
sad story.
Now the effect that this has had on pop culture.
Okay.
Right. So since this video surfaced, people have been fascinated by this case, particularly because of the bizarre behavior, the yes. way the video footage is. It's so creepy.
It is really very creepy. Creepy.
Yeah. So the circumstances of her death have been compared to a lot of plot elements in many different bodies of work.
Okay.
In 2005, there's a horror film called Dark Water. And it's an American remake of an earlier Japanese film. Basically, a mother and daughter move into a rundown apartment building. A dysfunctional elevator and discolored water gushes from the building's faucets, eventually leading them to the building's rooftop water tank, where they discover the body of a girl who had been reporting missing from the building about a year earlier. Mm. So, spoiler alert if you were going to watch that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, surely you saw that one coming, though.
Yeah. Apparently, there was an episode of Castle, the ABC series, and there was an episode titled Watershed, aired as the year's season finale in May of 2013.
Can I make a Law and Order prediction?
In the Watershed episode, the duo pursue leads in the death of a young woman found dead in the rooftop water tank of the, quote, Cedric Hotel.
Where they weren't even trying very hard.
No. Among the evidence is a surveillance video of the woman taken in an elevator. Ultimately, she is found to have been posing as a sex worker in order to investigate another guest at the hotel. So, yeah, they didn't even. They
not just, a lot of work done
same
there.
Same year, too, 2013.
Wow.
Another ABC series, How to Get Away with Murder.
Yes.
Had a similar storyline. Let's see.
I watched.
2014 revealed that a sorority girl missing at the start of the season was murdered and that her body had been hidden in the water tank on the roof of the sorority house. Similarly, her body just was discovered when a maintenance worker is called to the house to address a water pressure issue.
Did you guys watch How to Get Away with Murder?
I did.
I watched the first season and I liked it.
I didn't finish it either.
Okay. But I want to sometime. Uh-huh. I liked the first season.
Well,
very
I think
much.
I just ruined, I don't know how much of the storyline I just ruined.
There's
sorry,
really,
guys.
There's not a Law and Order episode because they're the first ones to hop on anything that happens in out in the real world and twist it into an hour long.
Don't really see one here. There's another
episode.
Film that was supposed to come out in Hong Kong, Hungry Ghost Ritual, which is about a ghost terrorizing a young woman in an elevator. And the security footage, the footage looks very similar to the video of Elisa.
Art imitates life, for better or worse.
Yeah, there's been a couple of screenplays written. And then, of course, in 2015, I talked about the fifth season. You said, yeah, I think you got that right. The fifth season of American Horror Story was inspired by her death in that year. Creator Ryan Murphy said the next season would be set in a hotel in present-day Los Angeles. He was inspired by a surveillance video of a young woman who, quote, got into an elevator in a downtown hotel and was never seen again, end quote. He didn't use the name, but most people think he's talking about Elisa Lam.
And then there's the Netflix. What is the name of the Netflix documentary that I...
Is it Vanished?
Is that it?
The Vanishing or something The Vanished. Like that. Something. Yeah. And from what I have not watched it, but from the reviews that I've seen, people feel like that was a very well done documentary.
Yeah. I remember coming away by a few takeaways from watching it, and maybe 2 years ago now or three. And I was just getting into the true crime thing. I think it was before we started doing this podcast. So it's been a minute. But I just remember thinking that it was very well done, and it kind of laid out the facts as they were understood at the time. And it didn't go nuts with its theories.
Yeah. The Discovery Plus show Ghost Adventures investigated her death in a 2-hour special launched on January the 4th, 2021. Mm. I have not seen that. I have no idea. Here it is. Netflix Crime Scene, The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel.
Okay.
And so you can
start there. If you want to dig a little bit deeper into this and learn more and see that video for yourself, that's one of the ways to do it. We'll share that link with that has the security video. But that Netflix documentary, I think it's just a 1-hour, 1.5-hour standalone documentary.
And it's 4 episodes.
Oh, is it? Wow. I didn't realize that. Okay. It has been a while. But anyway, I remember coming away from that thinking, well done. So okay, start there.
There's even a rock band who released a single entitled Elisa Lam in 2018.
Well,
the music video recreates the elevator security footage.
That's odd.
Yeah. Then there was another song. Let's see. This was in, that was 2018. In 2017, Sun Kil Moon released the songs Window, Sash, Waits, and Stranger Than Paradise as part of their album Common as Light and Love Our Red Valleys of Blood. Any of that sound good? The songs specifically reference the event and promote the idea that it was a hoax. There was a band member in an interview said, I've come to the conclusion that nobody died in the water tank. There's no way to identify the girl on the elevator. Her face is too pixelated.
Oh, good.
And the conspiracy nuts have entered the room.
Yep. In 2016 of March, BuzzFeed Unsolved studied the case. Hosts Ryan and Brent checked in the hotel to visit locations involved in the mystery. A lot of pop culture going on with this particular.
That's what happens when you get a case that has video that goes to the internet.
Yeah, that's the world we live in.
Yeah. There was also another Vancouver pop duo who did a video, but they didn't like, quote, it bugged me how tidily people explained away her disappearance with drugs or mental illness. They just didn't feel like people had been very fair to Elisa. So they wanted to sort of make her a human again in the video instead of all of this other craziness that happened. Yeah. So they were actually, I think, trying to have respect for her and not just put it to bed.
I don't know. I don't like the way they said explain it away by mental illness because, I mean, if that's what happened, that's don't make light of that. It's an issue and
definitely,
you know, it's not something to just disregard as impossible that must have occurred, might have occurred, could have occurred, because if it did, then it first of all explains it and it should be something positive about doing the right thing when it comes to people with mental illness. I mean, you know, take care of yourself and this won't happen.
Right. And I tend to, I don't know, I tend to be in the school of thought that that's what was going on with her. I tend to believe that she was not taking her medication appropriately and it led to some hallucinations and some confusion.
Sometimes the simplest answer is the correct answer.
I think so too. And I think because she was traveling alone, she didn't have someone to notice that this was something that was going on.
That's the biggest hole in this story for me. I get it. Young person wants to, you know, live their life and travel and, but they have maybe little sister could go or, you know, maybe ask a friend or just, it seems like the one mistake, I don't want to say mistake, the one thing that the parents might have thought about, considered, and maybe they did and thought, you know what, it's time. This is open the door and push her out of the nest and let her fly. Mm-hmm. But maybe, but maybe take a friend.
And I'm sure that that's.
Who travels alone? That's hard. I've traveled alone once in my life and that's. You know, you're just out there all by yourself.
I just don't enjoy it. Traveling alone. I've had to do that for work and just didn't enjoy it. Some people do. They enjoy the quietness and the calmness and the kind of doing their own thing. And
well,
but I'm sure her parents have thought that every single day.
Oh, I'm sure they have. Yeah.
Gone missing and since they found her. But I would say to people, if you have friends, family members, or maybe a new roommate or acquaintance or something, like if you're going to college, just a lot of college students out there, or just people in general, you're around someone and their behavior becomes erratic. It might be time to, if you know them well enough, to talk to their family. I hate to do that to people because people are adults, and if they don't want to take certain things, they have a right to not take their medication. But it does come with consequences. So when have people to just be aware of that. And
if
your doctor tells you, I'm not a doctor, but if your doctor, who is a doctor, tells you to take a medication a specific way, take the medication a specific way. And if you don't like the way it makes you feel, go back to your doctor and say, I don't like this.
Yeah.
And let them talk with you about some other options.
Get it right. Your life will be a lot more fun and manageable if you don't have that on your plate as well, along with all the other things that people have to deal with every day in their lives, that we all do.
And our hearts go out to Elisa. And
yes, absolutely.
I hate that it's she gets lost in the story every time because there's been so much pop culture influence of this, and because the Cecil Hotel is such a great spook story, it's really a very sad place to me. But I also think, it's obviously the lobby and everything was at once a very beautiful, posh place. And they even had it as a historical mark. So it's just kind of been cursed, I think.
Yep.
That's what I agree.
It sounds like.
Yeah, definitely. But anyways, that's the story of
That was great.
Elisa Lamb. What do you guys think?
I think it's probably the simple answer. I think she thought somebody was chasing her and she wanted to get away, and before she knew it, she'd run herself into a corner that she couldn't get out of, and it was a water tank.
And what do you think about her phone? Where do we think her phone
is? That's the one thing where is her phone?
I don't know.
If her hallucination makes her think someone's chasing her or
maybe
after
she
her,
thinks
maybe
the phone,
she ditched it.
Yeah, it makes as much sense as anything. Maybe. Threw it down the incinerator shaft and it was crushed. And
well, and even if she had thrown it in her trash or something, someone may have just found it and,
iPhone.
Stolen it,
new phone. I don't know. Again, it goes back to she's traveling alone and it's just.
Yeah, that's like you said.
I don't really recommend that for anybody. Not people in their 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. I don't recommend travel. I mean, if you just got to, that's fine. But the thing is, she was checking in with her family every day, so that the very day that she didn't, they knew something was up.
Yeah, but I mean, the fun part about travel for me is to share that experience with somebody.
Yeah,
it's not nearly as much fun when you don't have anybody to share the meal with, or the view, or the venue, or wherever you're going, whatever you're doing. I've tried it both ways, and I don't like it.
But I also think, you know, if you're going to travel alone, maybe you should really think about where you're staying.
There's also that.
Yeah, and some people have speculated that maybe she wasn't really aware of the history of the Cecil Hotel because she was from
Certainly
Canada,
plausible. Yeah.
And she was not
She may know, not have known what area.
Yeah,
was.
She saw $49 a night and thought, ooh.
This is very affordable whatever. For me. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So could possibly be the case. I don't know. But anyway, so that's the mysterious death of Elisa Lam. And
do some more research. There's plenty of it out there if you want to learn more about the story. But you did a fantastic job today telling us about it. That was super good.
Thank you. I don't think we'll ever have any updates on this one. I think this is pretty much it.
That's probably
pretty
the
much
end of that.
Case closed. But if by some chance they ever discover that phone or offer up anything else, we'll let you know. But we'll post that video.
Yeah.
And you can check it out for yourself.
And even if that case is closed, we will be back doing something else again here in the very near future, probably next week perhaps. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. We'll see you again next Wednesday. Same bat time, same bat channel. Shit, I can't believe I said that. I didn't mean to. Anyway, is that it? Are we done, guys?
We're done.
Good night, everybody.